Greetings, you're listening to Rebels Remembered, featuring Caitlin DeFord and Kelsey DeFord.
Greetings, travelers across the galaxy. I am Kelsey.
I am Caitlin.
And this is Rebels Remembered, and today we're talking about the very end of Season 3, so this is a two-part episode entitled Zero Hour. I can't talk today, I'm sorry. Zero Hour originally aired on March 25th, 2017. Synopsis from StarWars.com reads, "In final preparations for the attack on Lothal, Phoenix Squadron's plans are disrupted when Grand Admiral Thrawn discovers their location." Spoiler alert. Part 1 was written by Stephen Melching, with Part 2 being written by Henry Gilroy and Matt Mischievitz, directed by Justin Ridge.
Okay, a little bit of trivia on this episode. This episode marks the series debut of Imperial Death Troopers, a design first seen in Rogue One. Seen briefly in Secret Cargo, General Jan Dodonna makes his proper series debut in this episode. Of course, General Dodonna, he's been mentioned in the very first episode of the season. And we finally get him here. He is voiced by Michael Bell, who's been in the industry for a long time.
Yes, very long time.
A younger Bell can be heard in Star Wars A New Hope as the voice of Commander Willard in the original film. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Shows like how long he's been acting.
Full circle, but also he's got a massive resume about
it. Oh, I'm sure.
He's very well known in voice acting circles.
When Hera orders an evacuation, we hear the signal K10 given. This is the same evacuation order signal announced on Hoth when Leia gives the same order in Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. So, new information. Again, didn't know that.
Didn't know that either. The finale brings an end to the Phoenix Squadron, the destruction of the Phoenix Nest Carrier, the death of Commander Sato, and the loss of Adelon. So a lot happens in this two-parter.
Like, they lose heavily in this episode to the point that almost the rebellion is almost ended right then and there, at least for that cell in particular. Yeah. But for me, it was besides Twilight of the Apprentice, which ended on a sour note with Kanan getting blind and Ahsoka dying, and then, you know, Ezra dealing with the trauma of that.
Like, right.
This was very heavily, like, I think one of the biggest losses in the entire series, the way this one ends.
Yeah, and for me, like, for some reason, Twilight of the Apprentice, I don't know if it was the music or what, to me, still seems more sour than this one.
Okay.
Because, I mean, yeah, it does suck the way this ends. Like, they lose a lot. But there's still a smidgen there of hope. Mm-hmm. A little bit. That they're literally hanging on to it by the nail beds. Just barely grasping it. And I think that comes into play also what Kanan tells Ezra at the end of this episode. So, like, there's a little bit of hope. You just gotta keep on.
I will say, I think at the end of this episode, though, the morale is definitely in the toilet.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And so it's like, yes, we were badly, badly burned, scarred, just almost defeated, but we gotta keep moving on and for the good of the rebellion. Speaking of Dodonna, I did feel really bad for his unit in this. I mean, I feel bad for all of them, no offense. A lot of people, you saw so many ships just burning up. TIEs, cruisers, X-Wings, Y-Wings, all kinds of things,
yeah.
You know, blowing up. Of course, they're piloted by people, or life forms, I guess. But yeah, they were just kind of showing up to rendezvous so they could do the attack on the TIE Defender factory on Lothal.
Right.
So they just kind of showed up into the fire at the exact same time that Thrawn wanted to crush all of them. Which, masterstroke for Thrawn, if I can get all these cells in one place and just have a masterstroke and just get rid of all of them.
Yeah. I mean, he even says that in this episode, this is what I was waiting on. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like he was waiting on, he kind of knew they were going to attack the TIE Defender factory. I think I'm pretty sure he mentions it in the beginning of this episode. So yeah, you're right. I think he wanted this to happen. So he could launch into his attack or whatever.
I agree. It's just really sucked that not only did he discover the base, but he had to attack it at the exact same time other cells were coming to their aid.
Right.
Yeah. I've got some questions about this episode. Not really an activity, but I called this segment our season send-off, Zero Hour Zingers. So
you're so good with the names, dude. Like, I feel like I'm not.
Alrighty. Does Callus's decision to stand and fight Thrawn feel brave or foolish?
Another favorite part of my episode for the episode yeah. for me. To me, what else does he have to lose at this point?
That's true.
I mean, he knows who he is. Mm-hmm. Why not? Why not fight him?
I feel like he could be brave and foolish at the same time. Like, yes, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to go down fighting. But at the same time, you saw this dude take on
robotic, heavy,
you know, like, I forgot what they're called. The big robotic things
yeah.
that we see Thrawn fighting earlier on. So I think he can be brave and foolish at the same time. but I do love Thrawn's line to Callus. You have the heart of a rebel. Is that what he says?
Yes.
Something like that.
And he's like, I'll take that as a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Which just shows how far he's come.
Oh, yeah.
My other favorite line that Callus says in that moment is, you talk too much.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great line.
Yeah, love that line. Alrighty. Knowing how season 4 unfolds, how does Zero Hour set the stage for season 4?
I mean, like, this is probably the third time I've seen it, this episode. I haven't seen it a lot. And we do get the ending thing with Yavin mentioned.
Yeah.
So it kind of sets the stage that we're still heading in that direction. We're getting closer and closer to A New Hope. So I think that kind of sets the stage for, like, we're approaching the end of this journey.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Thrawn is still a heavy player in 4.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Are there moments or decisions here that feel more significant in retrospect? Like, in hindsight, if you know what happens in season 4? The one for me is Bendu's warning to Thrawn.
Oh, yes.
I see, hundreds of arms wrapped around you in a cold embrace. Like, if you know what happens to him in season 4, looking back on that.
Yeah, and I didn't even put... We're not going to spoil it, but
yeah,
I couldn't put those two dots together until way after the series had wrapped.
Same. It took like a tweet or a Tumblr posting for me to revisit that.
Because I had forgotten about it, to be honest.
Yeah. How would you rank Zero Hour among all the Rebels finales? So season 1, which is Fire Across the Galaxy. Season 2 is Twilight of the Apprentice. This one is Zero Hour, and season 4 is Farewell and...
Family Reunion and Farewell. Yeah. That's tough. All the finales are good in their own right. I feel like the crew, everybody that worked on the show, like, knew, like, this is a finale. We gotta really...
Mm-hmm,
bring it. I feel like everybody brought it. Animation, acting, everything that came together on the finales, I think they were all bringing their A game.
Mm-hmm.
For me, and we talked about this off pod... this is on the bottom for me, this particular finale. Because it's very strategic battles, tactics, and...
Very action-heavy.
Yeah, very action-heavy. To me, season 1 finale is still up there. It's the number 1 for me. Like,
okay.
It's very nostalgic for me, and I just love it. Like, I just love it so much. So it's probably season 1 finale for me, season 2, 4, and then this one.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but part of me wants to put 3 above 4.
Oh, really?
And put 4 on the bottom, so just do 1, 2, 3, 4. But it's been so long since I saw season 4. It's just, this one's so fresh in my mind, and while there's not a whole lot of emotional things happening, there is a couple things, like dealing with a loss, and a losing, and having to go get help, and that kind of thing. But it's really more action-heavy.
Yeah.
I think, then, out of all the finales.
Yeah, I think so. I think
because
right.
I think there's a lot of more emotional scenes and exposition in the other...
Yeah, you're probably
planning
right.
planning stuff in the other finales. Okay, looking back, does Zero Hour feel like the true pivot point between small cell resistance and full-scale rebellion?
That's a good question. I would say yes, because season 2, right when we started season 2... They still felt like they were a small rebellion
That's
to me.
That's true. Yeah.
Even though they were with Sato and Ahsoka, it still felt small.
Mm.
I don't think until the bigger players came in, like Mon Mothma and Dodonna, that it was, to me, felt more bigger.
That makes
sense. Did I answer the question? Sorry.
Does Does it feel like a pivot point between small cell resistance and full scale?
Definitely war? For three. Yeah. I mean, they just lost a ton of people, but.
Yeah, they're about to pivot to full scale rebellion.
Yeah.
And a hit again. Yeah, I think the same. Because, especially if you compare it to season one, where it's just ragtag group of rebels, and now it's like very organized, and you got ranking, and you got like different cells coming together. And yeah, I think it's definitely that pivot to full scale rebellion, which we've kind of seen throughout this season.
Yeah.
But we still would get those little missions where they're doing missions as the Ghost Crew, but it's still part of a larger rebellion. Does Hera and the Rebellion make the right call staying to defend Adelon? Or should they have retreated sooner?
I mean, they really had no... Thrawn pushed them to... Because he knows them so well by this point. He pushed them to... That was their only option, I feel.
Yeah, I think so too, because they didn't really have a lot...
They didn't have a lot of time.
A lot of time. It was just like, boom, there they are. And they've got those... Interdictors? They're two of them. And so, remind me again.
So the interdictors, when that happened, when I was watching this episode, and I think somebody tried to escape, I think it was Dodonna or something, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they had that little purpley, orangey glow. I'm like, I've seen this before. And they were pulled out of hyperspace. So the interdictor was first brought up in season two, Stealth Strike.
That's right.
When Ezra and Sato couldn't get out of there.
Yeah, because they tried to, and they got pulled immediately back. So there's two of those.
Yeah.
So could they have retreated? Maybe if they had more warning. Like, we did get Kallus's message kind of, you know, he didn't finish it through. But it was, like, immediately after that they just showed up.
Oh, yeah. They had no time.
So they didn't really have a whole lot of time. And I know Hera was wanting to defend Adelon, but after a while it's kind of like you need to cut your losses, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Thrawn's present on the ground? This is sort of the first time we've seen him leading anybody on, like, a physical space. He's usually in his ship commanding people to do other things.
To me, it was very, it was interesting. Like you said, we haven't really seen him as a ground, doing a ground assault and leading a ground assault. It's still intimidating. Still intimidating as hell, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, his presence to me didn't diminish any just because he's got boots on the ground.
Did you think it felt more impactful that he was physically, you know, near the rebel crew?
Yeah, and also kind of eerie because he does seem to have a reputation. I'll move the chess pieces, but I'm not one of them. And kind of creepy that he wanted to be there because they weren't going to take prisoners.
Yeah, well, then he says something like, we'll try to take the rebel leaders alive.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody was planning on coming alive. I think, yeah. But then it is kind of disturbing he wanted to be there to witness it.
That's what I thought was kind of, if you think about it that way, it's kind of a little bit eerie.
Yeah, and it's weird because we hear Hera say something like, they're going to send people down here to do the dirty work. But Thrawn is with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of eerie. Do you think Hera and Thrawn are actually equals on the battlefield, or is one clearly in control until outside forces like Sato's sacrifice or Bendu shift the board?
I mean, I love Hera, but like I said earlier, Thrawn's not a guy to play around with, and he studied her, and he studied her crew, and he studied the rebels, like this particular cell.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, unfortunately, to me, has one-upped her. He ones up, what am I trying to say? One-ups the entire Rebel Alliance until Bendu is a force you cannot control. He's not a logical chess piece you can move or do anything with. So mm-hmm. I think that's why that threw a monkey wrench in it. Sato did too, but to me, Sato's just tried to buy them more time.
Yeah.
But Bendu was something I think, shifted the battle. Mm-hmm. Because now you're dealing with something that... can't die.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you fight something that can't die?
Mm-hmm. Well, also, I think it was just a matter of numbers, too. Very outnumbered. And also, you got these interdictors flying around. You got each cruiser has its own set of fleet of TIEs. And so I think the plan was to sort of have a sort of space battle and then just jump like they always do. But can't jump. Mm-mm. Those interdictors are in the way. Do you think... Thrawn was thrown off by Sato sacrificing himself and the other two guys that were with him?
You can see that he is a little bit shocked. Even Kallus is shocked of what he just did. But I think Thrawn's more frustrated because if
Constantine
had listened to him, that wouldn't have happened. Had to have happened. Yeah. So I think he's more frustrated than anything.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think Ezra chooses to trust in others more in this episode rather than trying to solve things himself as he often did earlier in the series?
Definitely. I mean, he even contacts Mon Mothma for help.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And unfortunately, she basically says you're on your own. Yeah. In a way of speaking.
In a manner of speaking, yeah. And it's also a matter of, do we want to risk the entire rebellion here?
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, you have to make those really tough decisions sometimes. Is the rebellion worth one fleet? I think in Ezra's eyes, yes, it is worth it.
Right.
But, you know, in the bigger picture, like, you're going to be losing the entire rebellion, possibly, if you call in more troops, so to speak.
Yeah.
Also, we see him going back to the Mandalore to pick up Sabine and ask, not only pick her up, but asked Mandalore for their help, which says a lot, especially considering how he was at the beginning of season 3. He wanted to take charge and do everything by himself, and he was very trusting Hondo, and so I feel like in this episode he's not just overly trusting of people, but he's made the decisions of which person is going to have my back.
Right.
And if they don't, well, I'll deal with it when that comes to that.
Right.
Which, the direction he has with Sabine, I think we talked about off-pod when we watched it, when he is talking to, you know, Mandalore and Sabine's mom, and they're like, well, we've got bigger problems here. And he's like, okay, goodbye, Sabine. And he kind of, like, you know, walks away. And I was thinking, like, oh, he's really frustrated. And you were like, no, it's very possible that could be the last thing he ever says to her.
I mean, there's a hidden meaning there. There could have been a hidden meaning there. Like, and you could tell she looks somber after he says it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, he could die, and my ghost crew family could die. The rebellion could die. Like, yeah, to me, I think that's one of the reasons that she was like, nah, we have to help.
And this is a lot for Ezra, too, thinking about season 1 Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even, I think, was it Tristan says, no, is it Tristan or Finn Ryle says, you might as well just cut your losses and go back home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. This is the family that took me in and,
yeah,
you know, rescued me multiple times. I've rescued them. But yeah, he's got some cojones for being like, if you want to help me, I'll just go right back. You know, like, and do what? I mean.
Yeah, that's, he could have just left, like, fled somewhere else.
But. Yeah, but I mean, Hera even gave him both Ezra and Kanan to go find help, and so that was sort of honoring his word to Hera, like, I'm gonna look for it, I may not find it. I'll come right back. But this is kind of a funny one. If Thrawn had a how to deal with rebels handbook, which page do you think he would dog ear after today?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer. If he wrote a How to Deal with Rebels handbook, which page would be dog-eared after this battle?
Yeah.
What is a Bendu?
I mean, that's a pretty good one, yeah.
I don't think it would be in there, but like,
that was one of the few times, I think I mentioned this to you, that I saw him actually being unnerved by that interaction. Not just his warning, because he kind of like shifts his eyes around, like, what is he talking about? But after he disappears, he's completely forward by that.
I mean, he's inquisitive by nature. That's who Thrawn is. He even asks, what are you?
Yeah, that's true.
And curious. Then when he disappears, like, I don't know how to handle this.
Mm-hmm. Because logically, like, when Kanan was, you know, kind of like looking around at the clouds, and he's like, are you afraid of the storm, Jedi? Like, why should, there's nothing to be afraid of lightning. He's like, yeah, you should be. He's like, I don't understand what that means. Until later he finds out. Yeah, what is a Bendu? Like, he's just gonna look up a bunch of misforced mysticism from this point
forward. Yeah, he might look up, like, after this battle, just look more into the Force and creatures, and
I can actually see him doing that. Yeah, yeah.
What was that thing that disappeared after I shot at it? Like, I don't understand.
Like, expect the unexpected, I think.
That's a good one.
Because I can't spoil it, but there's something that Ezra does in season 4 that I don't think he was expecting that to happen.
Well, even Callus told him, mm-hmm. I've been in your place before, and something always, like you said, expect the unexpected. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, I know what I'm doing. I'm not like you. I've watched them. Something unexpected happens.
Yep. I think it's for him. He does come across as, or he can come across as arrogant.
Yeah.
Which, Pride Before Fall, you know, you think you got all the cards and really something could pop up that you weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's not used to the unexpected.
No.
I mean, he has it in his head how things are going to play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last question. If the Ghost crew had a group chat during this battle, what would everyone send in it?
Okay, so let's start with Hera. I feel like she would be the most vocal in this group chat. Constantly sending what the battle tactics were, like retreat, go back, like it would be all over the place. I feel like mom mode or something.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, hey, I need you here, You know, just like giving directions through the group chat.
Yeah.
What about Zeb? What do you think he would send?
I loved his interactions with Rex in this.
I did. It was really cool.
So I'm wondering if him and Rex would just be
sending emojis
or something. And then Harry would be like, guys, stop. Like, seriously.
Just send emojis of this thing.
The arm, buff arm.
Right when they blow up the, was it the walker?
Bing! Walker down.
Yeah. What about Kanan?
Hmm.
Can I say something? Being the dad figure that he is, I can totally see Kanan being kind of aloof in this chat.
Me too.
And only responding with, get back here. I need your help.
Or he just goes quiet.
Yeah, or that. He was dealing with Bendu at the time.
And then Hera's like, where are you? Nothing. You need to get back here. Nothing.
Like, and after he gets blown off the scooter, bing.
Just that. Yeah.
What about Sabine or Ezra?
I feel like it would be really sweet if, like, Ezra would send something like, I'm not going to leave you guys. We're not going to give up. Something very
profound
and inspirational. And then he just goes quiet. And then all of a sudden, both him and Sabine pop up in the group chat.
They're the only ones in the group chat.
Yeah.
What do you think of this episode? What'd you rate it?
I didn't want to do part by part, so I just kind of did it overall. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Originally when this episode aired, I was not a fan. I don't know why, though. I think it was just so action heavy. I don't know.
Got weary of it, maybe.
I saw something shiny and zoned out. I don't know what my brain was doing during it. But, 7 out of 10 for me.
I gave it an 8 out of 10 just because of the visuals alone in this episode are pretty dang good. All the explosions. You got Ezra and the Mandalorians, like, on the side of the Interdictor while stuff's blowing up around them. You got, you know, the twirling camera of the ghost.
The lightning storm.
The lightning storm in itself, how that's lit. The shield, seeing when the beams hit it and bouncing off, and you see kind of the light and hair reflected in Hera's face. Like, so a lot of the visuals in this episode, I think, are really good. Although my favorite parts of the episode would have to be the interaction between Kanan and Bendu.
Yes.
In particular, because I think it calls back to his past as being in the middle and not wanting to be neutral, but understanding you have the power to do something, you know, you should mm-hmm. do it.
And props to Freddie Prinze Jr.'s performance for that.
Mm-hmm.
The way he delivered that was really good, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. Seeing Ezra go back for Sabine and get help there. Just seeing Thrawn and Hera battling it out on, you know,
mm-hmm.
metaphorical board of chess is always really interesting. If I had to pick at something, it would be some of the flight battles, I think, for me in part one were a little bit weary after a while because it was just so much action.
Yeah.
And so finally when we kind of took a breather, per se, and went to the ground, I was, like, more interested.
Because
it was like we took a break from, you know, firing and things blowing up and it being very terrible, I guess.
Yeah. For me, I really like the small moments of our ghost crew, like the stuff with Rex and Zeb. I liked the little things with, like, the beginning with Ezra and Kanan. They have a little moment of...
That's true. Yeah.
Which, to me, resonates still is... He's like, I have nothing left to teach you. He's like, no, I mean about life, about being a good person. Kind of like a parent situation where you're always learning.
Yep.
You never stop learning from your parents or from really anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
And also the line with Hera and Kanan. Looks like the family's bad together. Let's try to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Like those little moments showing the ghost crew as a unit.
Mm-hmm. Because still understanding, like, what I think Rebels does a very good job at is understanding, like, yes, this is about the building of the rebellion. But at its heart, it's still about these core characters and the family they've created.
Yeah.
In the midst of the chaos. Of the, you know, we just happen to be fighting a rebellion, you know?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Can't believe we made it. We made it through season three.
Kallus has joined the team. Kallus has joined
the party. Oh, yes. Kallus. Ah. He stole my heart in this episode.
I know. And then he floating around in the escape pod.
Yeah.
That would be terrifying.
Like, and he immediately calls them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows they will probably rescue him.
And just seeing his interaction with Kanan, like him saying, thank you, Kanan. He, like, puts a hand on his shoulder. He's like, yeah, you know, good job. Thank you for risking everything. And very different from the Empire. Very, very different.
Very, very different.
From the get-go.
Yep.